You're listening to ESL Podcasts English Cafe, number 65. This is the English Cafe, episode 65. I'm your host, Dr. Jeff McQuillan, coming to you from the Center for Educational Development in beautiful Los Angeles, California. On this, our last podcast, well, our last English Cafe of 2006, we're going to be answering questions in this episode, just like we did in English Cafe number 64. In this cafe, we're going to try to answer several questions on many different topics. I'm sure that at least some of these will be of interest to you. Remember to visit our website at eslpod.com, where you can download a learning guide for this podcast. Now let's get started. Our first question comes from Germany, from J-O-E-R-N, Jern. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, so my apologies. The question has to do with something that I say on many of our regular ESL podcasts, our Monday and Friday podcasts. After I give my explanation of the dialogue, we listen to the dialogue again at a fast speed. And usually the expression I use is a native rate of speech. The question is, what does that mean, native rate of speech? Native, N-A-T-I-V-E, means where you are born. It relates to a specific place. So, for example, if you say, I'm a native of Minnesota, that means that's where you were born. When we use the term native rate of speech, we're talking about the rate, R-A-T-E, or speed, that someone talks who is a native speaker, who grew up from the time they were a little baby speaking English. So you are a native speaker of your language, whatever that language is, and I am a native speaker of English. So a native rate of speech is how people who are fluent in English would talk to each other. That's the speed at which they talk to each other. Our next question comes from Antonio, A-N-T-O-N-I-O, in Italy. Antonio wants to know the meaning of an expression that he heard or read, which is to preach to the choir. What does it mean to preach to the choir? Well, first let's talk about the words in this expression. We begin with preach, P-R-E-A-C-H. To preach means to give a religious talk, usually in a church. We call those religious talks sermons, S-E-R-M-O-N-S. A sermon is a religious talk that a priest or a pastor or a minister might give in a church. The choir, C-H-O-I-R, are the people who are singing. The expression to preach to the choir means that you are talking to people who already agree with you. The choir who sings at the church are probably already convinced of the religious beliefs of the person who is preaching. By the way, the place where the choir sings from is not normally called a balcony. In a theater, when you have a second floor, a second story, where you have seats up above, that's called a balcony, B-A-L-C-O-N-Y. In a church, the place where the choir is usually called the choir loft, L-O-F-T. The place where the minister, what we would call the preacher, that's a person who preaches, the preacher gives his sermon or preaches his sermon from a place called the pulpit, P-U-L-P-I-T. The pulpit is the place where the minister stands. So to preach to the choir means to talk to people who are already believe what you believe. And usually the expression means that you are in some ways wasting your time, because if you are trying to convince someone of something, it doesn't make any sense to try to talk to people who already agree with you. And that's what to preach to the choir means. So if your boss says to you, "We have to work harder. Everyone must work more hours," and you already are working hard and work additional hours, you may say, "You're preaching to the choir. I already believe that. I already agree with you." Our next question comes from Europe also, from Poland. P-A-W-E-L, Pavel, from Poland. Again, I apologize for my pronunciations here. The question has to do with an expression you will hear many times in English, common sense. Common, C-O-M-M-O-N, sense, S-E-N-S-E. Common sense means the knowledge or wisdom that you would get just from your every normal day life. Nothing that would require going to school or studying or memorizing. Common sense means that you are able to do things logically, reasonably, without necessarily having any special education. If you say that person has no common sense, you mean they are not very intelligent or very smart. They can't make logical or reasonable decisions. If you say this is common sense, if you are talking about an opinion that you have, well, it's common sense that you should put a coat on if it is cold outside. The idea here is that everyone should know that. It's therefore common. Everybody has that knowledge. It's not a specialized knowledge. Massimo, M-A-S-S-I-M-O, is a gentleman from Verona, Italy. He wants to know the meaning of the word though, T-H-O-U-G-H, especially when it comes at the end of a sentence. For example, Bob is very intelligent. He doesn't work very hard, though. In that expression, we mean however. It's sort of like saying but. Bob is intelligent, but he doesn't work very hard. Bob is very intelligent. He doesn't work very hard, however. That is the meaning there of the word though. You could also use though at the beginning of the sentence. You could say, though he's very intelligent, he doesn't work very hard. Either of those would be correct. Our next question comes from Elizabeth in Switzerland, E-L-I-S-A-B-E-T-H. Elizabeth wants to know the difference between two verbs. The first one is possess, P-O-S-S-E-S-S, and the second one is own, O-W-N. Both of these verbs mean to belong to someone. You can say, I own a house. I bought it. I live in it. I own it. It's mine. You could also say, I possess a house. However, we use the word own a lot more frequently than the word possess. If you're talking about something physical like a car or a house, you could say own or possess. Again, own is probably a little more common. If you are talking about some sort of personality characteristic, for example, he possesses intelligence. We wouldn't say he owns intelligence. When you want to say he has intelligence or he is intelligent, we could use the word possess. Or he possesses a good sense of mathematics. We wouldn't say he owns a good sense of mathematics. So if it's something that's not physical, something related to personality, then we would probably use the word possess. But if it's something physical, a computer, an iPod, a coffee cup, we would probably use the word own more common. To say possess would be a little more formal. It might sound too formal in many cases. Our next question comes from Yehudi, J-E-H-U-D-I. I'm not sure where they're from. Yehudi has a question about the expression, to allow you to do something. To allow, A-L-L-O-W, someone to do something, means to permit them, to, we might say, enable, E-N-A-B-L-E, them, to give them the permission to say, yes, it's okay for you to do that. Like any verb, if it was in the first person, I, you would say, I allow you. If it was in the third person, he, she, you would say, allows, he allows you, with an S at the end. This expression can also be used to talk about a situation. You could say, being in California allows me to see the sun and have warm weather more often than in Minnesota. So it can also refer to a situation that gives you the opportunity or permits you to do something. Our next question comes from Roberto, R-O-B-E-R-T-O, from Mexico, south of the United States. We also have a similar question from Jose in Spain, J-O-S-E. Roberto and Jose are interested in the pronunciation of the letter T. They've noticed in the past podcasts that sometimes the letter T is pronounced differently in different words. The example that Roberto asks about is the number 20, T-W-E-N-T-Y, and 90, N-I-N-E-T-Y. Roberto noticed that I pronounced the T in 90 like a D, and that is correct. When you have a T or two T's between two vowels, in this case, the vowel is E and Y, acts as a vowel in English, then the T is usually pronounced in normal conversation like a D. So, for example, there's a word L-A-D-D-E-R, ladder, which you use to climb up to the top of your house. There's also the word L-A-T-T-E-R, which is also pronounced in normal conversation, ladder, meaning the later or the more recent. Both of these words would be pronounced almost identically, if not identically, and you would just have to know the context of the sentence to know which ladder you were referring to. Sometimes, and this happens, I think, especially among some English teachers, they overpronounce the T. They pronounce it like a T in other words. So they'll say 90. But this is not the way we typically speak, and it is not the accepted way of pronouncing the T between two vowels. Now, in the case of 20, the number 20, there it's a little different. The T is not between two vowels, it's between an N and a Y, T-W-E-N-T-Y. Here, what happens more common is that the T gets dropped sometimes, especially when someone is speaking quickly. I have 20 minutes to get to my car. I have 20. It's almost like you pronounce it T-W-E-N-Y without the T. That would be in fast conversation. If you were speaking more slowly, more carefully, you could say 20. You wouldn't say 20. You wouldn't overpronounce the T, but you would hear it more likely if you are speaking more slowly or more carefully. The same is true with a word such as C-O-U-N-T-Y, county. If we were saying that quickly, I might say county. A county or a county is a part of a state. It's a region within a state. The differences then have to do with fast speech, maybe a little more informal speech, versus slow and carefully pronounced speech. Our next question comes from Eva, E-V-A, in Poland, back over in Europe. Eva has two questions. The first one has to do with the expression to pick a suitor. To pick, P-I-C-K, or select, a suitor, S-U-I-T-O-R. A suitor is usually a man who is trying to be romantically involved with another woman. They're trying to date them. And the woman hasn't quite said yes. The man is interested, and the woman might be interested, but, you know, women sometimes, they don't necessarily tell men that they're interested. So the man who is interested in a woman is called a suitor. It's an older expression. You don't hear this word that often anymore. There's also a verb related to this, which is to court, C-O-U-R-T. Again, it's an old-fashioned expression nowadays. When you are courting someone, when a man is courting a woman, they're trying to get the woman to like them. They're trying to get a relationship with that woman. So that is a suitor. So, Eva, good luck on picking your suitor. Eva also wants to know about an expression to make out. She saw or read somewhere the expression a make-out scene. To make out, M-A-K-E-O-U-T, sometimes this is spelled with a hyphen in between, sometimes as one word, but usually as two words. To make out is an informal expression that refers to when a boy and a girl or a man and a woman are kissing and hugging, usually for a long period of time. That is to make out. So when you are with your girlfriend and you are in the car and you are parked outside of your parents' house and you want to kiss your girlfriend. You kiss her for a long time. You hug her. That would be making out. Usually something you would do without other people watching you. A makeout scene, S-C-E-N-E, probably refers to a scene in the movie or a scene in a television show. The word scene, when we talk about movies or television shows, refers to one part of the show or one part of the movie. Movies usually have different scenes. First, they're in a car, then they're in a house, then the people go to the beach. Those would be three different scenes, different places or locations where the story takes place. So a makeout scene would, I guess, be a scene in a movie where a boy and a girl are kissing and hugging. Our final question comes from Hiro, H-I-R-O, in Japan. Hiro wants to know the meaning of the expression to watch the ball drop. This is a good question for this time of year because it is related to something that happens on New Year's Eve on December 31st at night. In New York City, there is a popular celebration of New Year's that is located in a section of New York City, of Manhattan, called Times Square. And in Times Square, which is a big area with buildings around it, there is a pole, and on top of the pole, they put a ball. And I think maybe a minute or 2 minutes before the New Year's, 11:58 p.m., the ball begins to go down the pole. It begins to drop. As it is dropping, as they get close to 30 seconds or so, people start to count down, that is, to count numbers backwards. So 30, 29, 28, 27. Everybody says that together until it gets to the bottom. And when it gets to the bottom, it's midnight. And the ball, I think, lights up. And the new year, there's a sign with the new year. So that is watching the ball drop. It's being in Times Square or watching it on television because it's on television every year, and seeing this big ball drop on New Year's Eve. Well, that is a good way to end this special edition, all question and answer edition of English Cafe. Come back next time on our next cafe, our first cafe of 2007. We're going to be doing a few new things in the English Cafe beginning next week, so please come back and listen to us again. And of course, you can also listen to our Monday and Friday regular ESL podcasts. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Jeff McQuillan. Happy New Year. We'll see you next year on the English Cafe. ESL Podcast English Cafe is written and produced by Dr. Jeff McQuillan. This podcast is copyright 2006 by the Center for Educational Development.